The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio with Dr. Alex Hubline and Dr. Josh Claypo. This is Adapt or Perish.
Welcome to another edition of Adapt or Perish. I'm Dr. Josh Claypo along with Dr. Alex Hubline. I'm laughing already because what you all don't get to hear before we come on air is Alex and I kind of going back and forth, ribbing each other a little bit, also with our producer, Jamie. And I'm still, from the last show, reeling at Kilroy was here, Alex.
Hey, man, what can I say? What can I say? I was at the right place at the right time, right?
But you know what? I should say this, like, as both a psychologist and as your colleague, I owe you the respect for being truthful. You could have denied it. You didn't have to share that with me, but you did. So anyway.
Right. Hey, I did verify that was their last platinum album. So it did pretty well. So I think I may have been wrong about it was their most popular or best-selling album. But yeah, you know, everybody's got their own weird musical quirks, right?
Yeah, well, we haven't told you, and I don't know if I've ever said this on Tony Curry Radio. I'm sure I have on our Curry and Claypo show, but you know that Tony Curry is a fan, as am I, of cheesy 70s love songs.
Oh, I did not know that, right? Yeah. So you got the whole Pina Colada song going through your head
now? No, not that one. There's some other ones, which we'll talk about. I don't even know that that's disruption. We won't talk about it. All right. So let's move forward from our last show. You know, the last show we're talking about, you know, disruption. And I think about disruption as kind of, even if it's planned or staged, it's the spark, right? It's the little bit of shift that may or may not stick. It may or may not take something in a different place. But you brought up this really great idea of going past that to sort of, we think about the Beatles, a revolution. Disruption, you know, may live or may die. It may die on the vine. It may stay around, but revolution means you have fundamentally changed. It's a paradigm shift, as I remember back from my sort of research methodology days. What is a revolution? How, you know, we didn't see it coming from the Beatles until it happened. And how do we think about that from technology, or can we think about it in a forward-looking way, right? Or can we only recognize, you know, whether it's the Beatles or whether it's the Stones or whether it's an Apple or a Microsoft, can we only recognize it after it's already become a revolution? Or can we plan for a business revolution that we're going to execute on?
Yeah, I mean, all great questions, right? Yeah, and you know, it's funny, I mean, going back to...
You know what's so great? Sorry, you know what's so great about this? I get to ask all questions. You have to answer them.
I know. I have to answer them with obscure Sticks references, right?
That's right. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go.
But, so, you know, the first band that I ever really got into in my life, the very first band was the Beatles. And, you know, it was quite a happy accident. My father had a stereo system, and this is, I don't know, mid-70s. And he had all these old Beatles 8-track tapes, right? Because it was all 8-track back then. And so when I first kind of got to the age where music was interesting to me and I wanted to kind of find my own music, you know, I had this selection of 8-track tapes to go through and there were a lot of the older Beatles albums on. And so I listened to that stuff because it was all I had to listen to back then. I mean, I just listened to it over and over and over again. And I came to really love the Beatles. And, you know, you kind of look at what they were able to do. Yeah, they really did kind of start a revolution, didn't they? I mean, they were that first part of that whole British invasion, extremely talented guys, great sound. And people just went crazy over them. I mean, I still look back on, you know, some of the old videos of them, you know, showing up for concerts and, you know, people just went nuts for that kind of music. And it really was kind of a revolution. And then, you know, they wrote this song Revolution, which was, you know, kind of all about political revolution. But, you know, I was listening to it the other day. I was actually cleaning my pool. That's where I get my ideas for the radio show. I go off with my little net and I clean out my pool and I don't think about anything else, right?
I do the same thing. It is. That is so weird. I find myself, I find myself walking in circles around the swimming pool, cleaning off leaves, listening to classic rock. And at some point I've lost like how many times I've gone around and I'm down to the last pine needle. So anyway, look at us. We're like, you know, I don't know, man. Now I'm going to forgive you for Kilroy. Go ahead.
See, there you go. We get our great ideas by pulling pine straw and leaves out of our pools, right?
That's right.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting because, you know, you go look at the lyrics of that song. And again, it's all about political revolutions. It's all about, you know, it's kind of more of a political statement. But you know what? I think what's fun in the business world, or I think in any industry, is being able to learn from other industries and learning from things that happen either in other industries or other parts of society or other parts of our culture that maybe don't have a direct connection, but you can connect them back and see some of the lessons that people have learned over time. Mm-hmm. And so you look at things like political revolutions, right? Those have been going on as long as probably people have existed. There's always going to be people that think differently, that kind of bring a new mentality to the status quo. They kind of challenge the status quo. And the successful revolutions are ones that are able to overcome the status quo and move on to something different. And I think it's the same thing in innovation. I mean, we think about innovation, it's really a very similar type of thing, particularly when you're dealing with, say, a large company. And I've worked for a lot of big companies over my career, and I've tried to start many revolutions in those companies. Some succeeded, some failed. But it's all about going against sort of the traditional way of thinking. It's going out and saying, look, I know this is how we do business today, or I know this is how we've been set up and optimized to go to market or whatever it is, but I think we should do something different in addition to what we're doing. And so you find it's almost like conducting a political revolution where, you know, you have to build consensus and you have to go in and convince people to think differently. And most of those attempted revolutions, if you will, and I don't think of revolution as necessarily a bad word, although it can mm-hmm. be. You can have political coups and things like that that maybe aren't the right things to do or what have you. But this idea of being able to go out and convince people that, hey, you know what, we need to think differently. We need to do some things that are different. And let me show you some of the benefits to being able to do that. It's kind of part strategy, it's part innovation, and then it's part politics. You know, you have to get the right people on board with the ideas. And I think we've seen the same thing in kind of the music industry, right? You've got to go out there and convince, or at least back then you had to go convince the record companies that you wanted to go do something different if you were an established band. And most of those guys were like, no, we want you to just keep doing what you're doing. Your album sales are great. But a lot of bands came back and said, no, we're going to try something different. So the Kilroy Was Here thing, I think, is a good example of that. I think the Beatles were a revolution, partially because, you know, those guys, you know, you go read the history of the Beatles, you know, they played every night in a nightclub. I think it was somewhere in Germany, in Berlin or somewhere, for years and years and years before anybody had ever heard of them. And then they finally kind of burst on the scene with just this unbelievable music, stuff that people had really just never heard before. And so, you know, every time you do that, you're always in a, when you're in a revolution, you're really trying to do some disruptive innovation. It's always about looking at it holistically, right? These ideas don't necessarily sell themselves. And in fact, a lot of times you see a lot of resistance to new ideas because, you know, we talked about this in the last episode. Disruptive innovations and revolutions, they create entirely new markets, they create entirely new competencies, but they also destroy markets and they destroy competencies as well. It's sort of that process of creative destruction. And so the people that stand to lose the most if there is a revolution are the people that are going to resist that revolution the most. And so in companies, you see this happen all the time where great ideas get killed off because there are people that stand to lose a lot. And those people tend to be the ones that are running the company today. It's also the same thing with governments. It's the same thing with record companies, so on and so forth, right? People have this fear of losing what they have because they're very comfortable with it. And you know, as a psychologist, I mean, people are resistant to change, right? Most people fear change. But ironically, change is where all the opportunity is in life. So yeah, it's really interesting when you kind of look at this whole idea of starting a revolution. And then you kind of look at it when the revolution does take hold. And I think this is really true in political revolutions. You get the people that kind of start the revolution. And then there's the question of, well, can they actually run the revolution, right? Do they have the competencies to do it? So you see a lot of political revolutions that happen. Somebody might overthrow their you know, domineering totalitarian government, right? They overthrow their totalitarian government, and then things just go into this period of chaos, right? Where nobody knows what to do, because the totalitarian guys, those guys were terrible from a right standpoint and a lot of things, but a lot of them actually run their governments pretty efficiently. And so one of the questions in my head is, you know, do you have the same or the competencies required to start a revolution and get it kind of over the cliff there? Are they the same types of competencies that will help you drive that revolution onward and sustain the revolution?
Well, how do you, let me ask you this, both in music, I know that fairly recently they've come out with the second, third Beatles documentary. They found footage that they hadn't discovered before, recording sessions, etc. And we see this with all kinds of, you know, successful bands. They show them writing music together and yelling and screaming and arguing, and one wants to go in this direction and one wants to go in that direction. And we've seen it time and time again. You think about the big companies, and I know the companies that you work with at Adaptogen. Can a company set out to, I'm thinking Apple immediately, but I know there's others. Can a company set out and say, this is what we're going to do. We're going to fundamentally change the way this is happening. And here are our plans for it. And can they stay on track? And you get an inside view, obviously a view that a lot of us don't. How do they keep it together to stay, I don't want to say with their vision, but to stay that way so that they actually create that revolution? Or is some of it circumstance, you know, the fact that the company can stay together as with the right people, or people come and go? Again, we've seen it with band members, different drummers, different lead singers, you know, et cetera. Van Halen is a great example. We saw it with Journey, you know, we've seen it with CCR and all of those. How does a company start and sustain a revolution? And from your side, being there, you know, with Adaptogen kind of on the inside, helping them technologically, how does that happen?
Yeah, it's tough, right? It's not an easy thing to do. So I think, you know, let's just go back to the music world for a second. And I think maybe we can draw some analogies there. You know, to your point, there are bands that evolved that have had like a million members over the years, right? There's bands that have been around for a long, long time. Mm-hmm. And they've gone through some very, very different lineups. You know, you take like a band like Genesis, like I don't know how many members have been in Genesis over the last 60 or however many years, right? But I know it's a lot, right? I mean, it's a lot of different people have come in and out of that band. And so I think some bands, in order to be able to kind of sustain the revolution, they have to be able to go out and seek out, you know, potentially different types of people with different creative streaks in order to be able to kind of sustain the revolution. But then there's bands, you know, that have basically had the same members forever. You know, again, you take a band like Rush. I mean, outside of their first album, it was three guys for 40 years doing music. And I think the difference there is that, you know, those guys just constantly kept pushing the envelope, right? They constantly kept challenging each other to innovate and to get better as instrumentalists, to get better as songwriters and arrangers, and to kind of push the envelope. But even they went through multiple producers. You know, they had one producer for, I don't know, their first seven or eight albums. And then, you know, they made a change in the 80s. They said, you know what, you've done a great job, but we're kind of shifting in a different direction. And we want to do some different things creatively. And we feel like we need a different producer in order to be able to do that. So they went through a series of different producers. So I think it's not just the band members. It's also the people that they bring in to help produce the records, to help them with arrangement, so on and so forth. So I think that, you know, every organization goes through that evolution as they're trying to go out and create a revolution. You may have to go out and change out some of the members because, you know, it takes startups, for instance. Every company out there today, other than sort of conglomerates, was once a startup, right? I mean, it's crazy to think that IBM one day in the past was this little startup, or HP. I mean, that's a pretty well-known story. You know, they started it off in a garage in California, or even Apple, right? Yeah. You take Steve Jobs, Steve Wozniak, those guys, two guys in a garage, and now they're worth, you know, the company's worth $3 trillion. So I think we have to look at it from that perspective, that once upon a time, almost every company out there was a startup, and then, you know, they grew the company and they kind of moved from startup mode into, let's call it, sustainable mode. And then I think the difference between success and failure at that point is, do you keep thinking like a startup? Do you keep trying to innovate? Do you keep trying to push the boundaries? Or do you need different people to come in and help you? Because I think, you know, you brought up Apple, and I think it's a great example. You know, Apple did a ton of really, really innovative stuff in the 80s, right? Late 70s to say the mid 80s. And then they fired Steve Jobs and brought in other people to run the company. And that lasted for, I don't know, 10 or 12 years. And it was a total train wreck, right? I mean, it was a total disaster until they brought him back in. And he said, you know, his first decision was, well, what if we made our computers out of transparent plastic with different colors, right? And they came out with the iMacs and things like that, and sort of kickstarted the company back in that direction of innovation. So I think, it's, you know, Apple's a great example of a company that started out as an innovator. They thought they needed to bring some different people in to run it in steady state. That was a train wreck. So they brought back one of the founders and were able to then grow the company and keep pushing the envelope and keep innovating with the iPod and the iPhones and iPads and so on and so forth. So I think it varies a lot by company, right? There are companies out there that, you know, they're quite happy to just keep going and doing what they're doing. And then there's companies that are never satisfied with what's happening. And I think the difference between those, a lot of it is in the leadership and in the culture of the company. Mm-hmm. Building a corporate culture is really, really hard. Yeah. And it's hard to copy. It's not like you say, well, we're just going to go implement Google's culture tomorrow. That's a really hard thing to do.
No, I'm laughing because I hear it all the time in the work that I do. So, you know, we're going to we're going to establish a culture. And I hear this from CEOs, and, oh, you know, and I'll say, great. But if you think about it, a culture happens. You try to refine it. You try to shift it. You try to create something. But you, as a person, even as a CEO, can't establish it. And one of the things I kept thinking about as you were talking, with the whole revolution, and you talk about different producers and staying focused. And again, I think about Adaptogen, because you all come in, and you can come in, and this is with other technology as well. We were talking about this before the show. Anything can be done. It's almost like the contractor or the builder. You know, oh, we'd like to have this. Is it possible? Sure, anything's possible. We can build it. How do you stay, or do you see this with Adaptogen, companies that are kind of wanting to go down a certain road, but they're looking at all the things that a company like Adaptogen can bring, or all the software solutions, and frankly, they get distracted. And we've seen it. We've seen it with bands. Sorry. Kilroy.
It's not an example. I mean, you're just going to keep going back.
I don't know. They kind of turn their head because there's lots of opportunity. Anything can be done. I would imagine that with Adaptogen and your software solutions, and I'm not just saying this as a plug, that, you know, you can go in and a company's like, well, we want to do this, or what about this, or what about this? And you all are saying, you know, well, yeah, that can be done. That can be done. That can be done. How do you mash up both the enabling factors, being able to do almost anything, you can do it with music, right? And then also staying focused enough to pursue your revolution, to pursue the culture, to move in the direction that you want.
Well, I think you've hit the nail on the head there, right? I mean, there are a lot of companies that go out and they say, you know, we want to do digital transformation. We want to have this revolution in technology that's going to change the way our company works, and it's going to make us more efficient, and it's going to help us do X, Y, and Z. but a lot of them get distracted along the way, and you really hit it there. They start off with great intentions, and then they find out that, hey man, this is really hard. It's hard to change a culture. It takes years potentially to change a culture, particularly in a big company. And I think, you know, part of it comes down to making sure that as a company, you've got the right set of guiding principles for your people. And there are companies that do this really, really well, like Amazon, for instance. You know, Amazon has the Amazon way, and it's the principles upon which the company believes that they'll achieve success, and they'll drive it forward. And guiding principles are kind of interesting. And, you know, at Adaptogent, we have our own set of guiding principles. And the very first one is something called innovate like our lives depend on it. That's one of our guiding principles that, you know, if you're sitting there saying, well, should we do the status quo or should we go try something new? Yeah, you probably want to default to trying something new rather than just the status quo. But they're guiding principles because they tell you what to do or they inform your decision when the decision isn't, it's not an easy decision to make, right? You don't know which direction to go. You know, you don't know to go left or to go right. And by the way, that's a lot of business decisions. That's a,
yes,
the majority of them, right? Where you don't have all the data and you don't know what's going to happen. And, you know, you're combining whatever data points you can get with some gut instinct and some research. And it's kind of this mishmash of things where at the end of the day, though, you have to make a decision about which direction you're going to go. I think guiding principles help companies make decisions when the decision isn't obvious. And if you get those guiding principles right, and you can actually get people to buy into them and believe them and use them, you know, that's one tool that is very effective for helping to change a culture, to drive more innovation, to drive you more towards a revolution. But there are so many companies out there that have said, you know, we're going to go off. And again, I'll go back to digital transformation. We're going to go off on this great digital transformation exercise, and it's going to be wonderful. And we've got all this great new technology from guys like Adaptogent that's going to really help us out and accelerate the whole process. And then they forget about the people aspect. They forget about the cultural change aspect. And again, people don't like change, or at least most people don't, right? I mean, I love change. I love it. That's why I got into the IT world and the computer world. When I was 10 years old, I got a hold of my first computer. And I thought, man, this is amazing. You can make one of these things do literally anything you tell it to. Mm-hmm. And so for me, every generation of technology, it's like being a kid in a candy store, right? It's like waking, but being a 5-year-old and waking up on Christmas morning, you know, I get to see all these really cool new technologies come out, and my house is just littered with technology. My wife yells at me every time I buy something new. She's like, don't we already have 5 laptops? I'm like, yeah, but this one's new, right? So being able to have the right guiding principles, to be able to make a very, very clear focus on we're going to change the culture, and we're going to do we're going to create a revolution here. I think one of the key success factors is making sure the people are bought in, and that you create a culture that isn't based on fear of change. It's based upon recognizing that, you know, where there's change, there's opportunity, and where there's opportunity, there's money. And I think that's true of bands too, you know?
Yeah, but I was just thinking about you and all your computer toys. And you know, it's one thing. I mean, I don't disagree. But as you were talking, I was thinking about, that's what I love about the show. If you could see what's going on in my head, I'm going technology, I'm going family, and I'm going rock bands all at the same time. But you think about it, it's the band that says, you know, one of the band members is like, look, man, I gotta feed my family. You know, like, I don't know, we can't afford to, I can't make a change right now because I got to put food on the table, and I don't, what if it flops, you know, or CEO or even, you know, board of directors, we don't want to take that risk right now because, you know, we've got our shareholders, and what if we go down that direction? And so, you know, it's interesting that you say there are people absolutely who embrace change. But if you're a band, if you're a company, if you're part of a family, you may not be in a place to embrace change with the collective. And I just, wonder, I mean, I just keep wondering how software allows us to transition through the change. this is a little long-winded, but one of the things that I see a lot is people love the idea of change. Oh, this is going to be great. And they're okay when they make the leap and they're on the other side, but it's the middle part, right? It's the leaving where you are to arriving at where you think you're going to be that people very often, you know, they chicken out. They say it's not a good idea. And a lot of times it's because people don't want to risk a bad outcome. So how do we do that in business? I mean, can we have calculated change? How does software help us do it? Not so much incrementally, but in a way that maybe has got some safety nets involved.
Well, I think that's it. I think you hit the nail on the head there. It's you're right. I mean, change is always going to be risky, right? Again, whether you're starting a band or you're changing your sound or it's a company changing direction and pivoting to a new thing. I mean, there's always going to be risk. There's never a risk-free revolution, right? I mean, or at least not that I'm aware of, right? There's always risk. And if you're talking about political revolution, I mean, even taking the United States, right? The founding fathers of the United States, right? Most of those guys got killed in the revolution, right? In the Revolutionary War. I mean, a lot of the people they lived some pretty terrible lives. So they did take risks. They took amazing risks that I don't know if everybody's aware of that. I think there's always going to be risk. And then the question to your point is, how do we go out and mitigate some of that risk? And I think there's ways of doing it. I think one way you can do it is through technology. You can use technology to mitigate some of the risks by giving you the ability to go off and try things very quickly and relatively inexpensively. You know, you go out and you do some experimentation to kind of validate your hypothesis. If your hypothesis is, look, the market is going in this direction and, you know, the next big thing is going to be the metaverse or whatever they're calling it these days. You know, we're going to go out and we're going to do some controlled experiments and we're going to go spend as little money as we can to go validate the hypothesis we have that this is the next big thing, or maybe something else is the next big thing. So I think if you choose your technology carefully and you have the mentality that it's okay to fail. I mean, everybody says this, but few companies actually do it. But if you're going to fail, fail quickly. Don't go pouring hundreds of millions of dollars into something and then fail at it, right? And then having the processes, kind of a formal process to say, are we achieving the goals that we set out for? Are we on the right path? And have some go, no-go decisions in that process to where you're very candidly and objectively evaluating your progress. And then you know when to pull the plug. Then you can say, okay, we've got built-in checkpoints here to say, we're either going to keep going with this because things are working about the way we thought they were going to, or they're not working the way we thought, we're going to go pull the plug. Now, if I can use software and I can use technology to accelerate the process so that I'm not spending a huge amount of money in each of those iterations, then all the better, right? I'm not betting the entire company on it. I'm just betting some relatively small dollars on trying to validate my hypothesis that this is going to be the next big thing and we can be a player in that market or that space or whatever it happens to be.
You know, super interesting. I don't know if this is a stretch on an analogy, but if I'm a band and I want to take it in a new direction, I throw a song out, maybe, right? You got your new album, and a lot of the stuff sounds really good and kind of the same, but there's a couple little twists. Maybe I throw in a ballad. Or something a little more up-tempo, or something that's got a little more synthesized, or a little more rock, you know, more guitar, whatever, a cover. And you kind of test it out to see sort of how does the audience react to it versus an entire album that may fall flat on its face. You know, and I guess in some ways, technology allows us in companies to do sort of the same thing. Try a new product line that's maybe not, like you said, it's not the entire company shift, but it's a spinoff. It's a new song, and we see how it goes. I mean, is that, I don't know, is that too much of a stretch?
No, that's exactly it, right? It's about sort of this idea of rapid prototyping of something. And I think when you go, you know, one of the, I read a lot of interviews with band members of bands that I like. And they kind of talk about the history of the band and what happened and they released this album or whatever. But, you know, the thing that strikes me with a lot of bands and a lot of the interviews I've read is that what's obvious to us in retrospect that, right, hey, this song was a big hit. A lot of times those guys had no idea that a particular hit song, a classic that we see today, was actually going to do well in the marketplace. Right. So I read an interview with Alex Lifeson and Geddy Lee from Rush, one of them. And they were talking about when, you know, Tom Sawyer and the whole Moving Pictures album came out. Right. They had no idea that Tom Sawyer was going to be a big hit. I mean, they thought, yeah, it's a good song, it's great, but it actually turned out to be one of their biggest hits. But they really didn't have that. And so I think a lot of bands, even when they're sticking to their own sound, they don't really know ahead of time whether or not those things are going to be hits. So they try some things, they try some different things to go out there in the marketplace. They see what the marketplace reaction is, and then, you know, they can adjust like that. So I think it's the same exact thing with companies. The past is always obvious, right? Everybody has 20/20 hindsight. But when you're looking forward and you're looking into spaces where you don't really know what's going to happen, this idea of being able to go rapidly prototype something, get it out into the market, see how it goes, and then look at the objective data coming back to saying, is this working or not? I think you can do that in a band. I think you can do that in a company. I think you can do that in a government or even a nonprofit setting. So yeah, so I think that you're spot on there. I think that's exactly how you do it.
You know what else you can do it? With a show like Adapt to Perish.
I think exactly.
I think we are starting a revolution right here. And if you want to listen to us and be a part of this revolution, then you need to tune in to Tony Curry Radio, because another episode of Adapt to Perish will be coming up next. You can listen to us every week. For Dr. Alex Hublein, I'm Dr. Josh Claypo, and this is Adapt or Perish.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.